spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive, beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation. And it shall be a statute forever in your generation.
The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations make free time available to present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Today's program, Children of Strangers, was written by Virginia Mazur and is presented in observance of the Thanksgiving season.
Blessed art thou, O Lord, King of the universe. We thank thee for the produce of the field, for this desirable, good, and ample land, which thou wast pleased to give as an heritage unto our fathers, that they might eat of its fruits and be satisfied.
Recited every morning from the Jewish prayer book. Recited now for the season of Thanksgiving. For this desirable, good, and ample land. Of many faiths and many nations, as we join in giving thanks, let it be a time for remembering that our harvest is of the Spirit, too. That our riches are in our people, in our differences, as well as in our likeness. Walt Whitman said it, "This is not a nation, but a teeming nation of nations."
Mary Adams?
Here.
Joe Barranco?
Here.
Ann Cabot?
Here.
David Cohen?
Here.
What is America to its Barrancos
here.
And Cohen?
George Kabulian?
It's the Solas
here.
And Kabulians and O'Malleys. O'Malley. What are they to America? Have we given them a feeling of belonging, a full participation in our democracy? Or do they remain on the outer rim of American life, still to us, the children of strangers?
We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, among which are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Whew! I said inalienable right that time, didn't I, Teach?
The preamble to the Constitution of the United States. Words that every schoolboy knows today. Words grown shopworn with usage. But once they flashed across the world like a new comet in the sky.
Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
This was the promise. This was what we offered to the Barrancos and the Cohens, the DeSolias, Kabulians, and the O'Malleys. To all the people of the old world, worn thin by poverty. Ground down by racial and religious strife. Often they translated the promise into more simple terms.
In America, a man can get ahead.
In America, nobody is afraid of anybody.
In America, everybody has ice cream every day.
Whatever personal meaning he gave to the promise, every newcomer who streamed through the portals of Ellis Island felt a sense of something new beginning.
Where is America, Father?
Don't push. Await your turn.
I want to see America.
Step aside. Your papers are not in order.
What is the man saying, Father?
Don't push. Await your turn.
Father, when will America begin?
What did you do in the old country?
I was a teacher of the Talmud.
Okay, you can sew pants. What did you do in the old country?
Well, I was a farmer in the old country.
Good. You can dig ditches.
Is this where we're going to live, Mother? Don't any trees grow in America anywhere?
You're going to play, Horn. You can tell him a mile off. Hey, look at those cars. clothes, will you? Yeah,
well, say something. Don't you know nothing? Don't you even know your own name?
Mama, I won't go back. Not ever again. I hate school.
What kind of talk is that? The school is free to everybody. Free. How will you learn to be an American if you don't go to school?
Emma, will you have a seat? Teacher!
Yes, Joseph?
You are saying that uptown in the park, they have put up for this man a statue?
That's right, Joseph.
And this man, you say, he is a Pole?
Yes, he is.
A Pole just like me?
Yes, just like you.
And they have put up for him a statue.
Public school, one step forward in the long, long process of Americanization. The settlement house, another step. Designed to meet the social and welfare needs of poor people in city slums, it made a special appeal to the immigrant population.
H-O-U-S-E, house.
Good, Mr. Finelli. Now, give me the plural of house.
Plural? It's highs.
No, no. No, Mr. Finelli, that's wrong. The plural is houses.
Wait, I do not understand. The last night you teach two mouse is mice. Why tonight is not two house highs? English I will never learn.
Cheer up, Giuseppe. Last year I was an ignoramus like you. Now I'm the best speller in the class. Listen. I-N-V-I-N-C-I-B-L-E. Invincible. It means don't give up.
Besides night classes in English, the settlement offered help with citizenship papers. Its mothers' clubs taught child care and hygiene. But more important, the settlement, in a world of brick and concrete, offered something for the spirit. Lectures, recitals, concerts.
Ah, the music, Sally, it is beautiful.
I thought you were a singer, Benjamin. Benjamin, put back on your shoes.
Huh?
Here you should have more respect.
The public school, the settlement, both expanded the world of the immigrant beyond the narrow confines of the island in which he lived. But only a relative few of the first generation did they reach. The struggle for survival, to get ahead, for many was all-consuming. In most families, only the youngest children could be released from the burden of earning a living. Upon arrival, the factory swallowed them up, sometimes even the 8, 9, and 10-year-olds. At a party at Hull House, a little Italian girl pushed away a candy cane.
Take it away! I hate candy!
Why, Marie? Tell me, why don't you like candy?
Because, Miss Adams, I work in a candy factory.
Oh.
I wrap caramels. I wrap caramels all day long. I never want to see any more candy as long as I live.
How old are you, Marie?
I'm 9 years old.
And you work 12 hours a day in a candy factory?
Yes, ma'am. I stand on a box.
Because of this child who hated candy, the residents of Hull House began to investigate sweatshop conditions in Chicago. They helped push through the state legislature a child labor bill for Illinois, and by their agitation gave impetus to the whole child welfare movement. Today, every state in the Union has a minimum age work law of 14 years or over for most occupations.
Life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness.
The wheels of democracy moved slowly, but with each advance in human happiness, the child benefited. The immigrant child is well. Laws alone, however, were not the whole answer to the exploitation of the child. As long as the child's income was needed to buy meat and bread and shoes, the parents evaded the law.
I ain't going to school no more. I got a job.
Yeah, you ain't big enough to have a job. You ain't as big as me.
I'm going on 10. My father says I can pass for 12.
Yeah, but suppose the boss finds out.
Ah, the boss won't tell. He can hire me cheaper than he could hire a man.
And this, of course, led to hardships of a different sort.
Mike, you're home already. What's happened?
I'm 10 minutes early, so it means something's happened.
Mike, now tell me the truth. You were fired.
I quit.
You quit? What do you mean?
I had to quit. They tried to cut our wages again.
Well, couldn't you talk to the boss?
We tried talk. Judy Chico talks for all of us. Boss fired him, so we all quit.
You quit your job. Your family will starve, all because of an Italian that couldn't keep his mouth shut.
Rose, you stop it. That kind of talk is for the old country. Italian, Pole, Litvak, Jew, what does it matter? We're all tailors. We can't pay the rent. Can't buy shoes for our children. We've got to stand together.
Seven nobodies against the boss. Where'll it get you?
We're not just seven nobodies. We're going to organize our shop and join the union.
At one time, the immigrant had been accused of lowering our standard of living by accepting sweatshop wages. Now a new charge was leveled against him.
These foreigners are nothing but agitators and troublemakers. We ought to put them on a boat and send them back where they come from.
No, shoot them down.
Amidst violence and bloodshed, the rights of the American worker to a living wage were established. Today, federal law sets a minimum wage and a maximum work week, and the rights of the worker to organize and strike are fully protected by law. In this struggle for human welfare, the immigrant made one of his first great contributions to American life.
For the most part, though, we first-generation Americans remained outside the mainstream of American life. Just to survive in a new and sometimes hostile world, this was our chief concern. To our children, we passed on the struggle for something more.
Yosef, my son, I'm an old man now. When I was young man, to come to America, that was the big thing. Now I'm an old man. I sit in my rocking chair and I dream about the old country. It is now for you, Yosef. It is now for you.
In America today, there are 23 million persons whose parents, one or both, were born in the old country. One-sixth of our population is second-generation American. What has America meant to these children of strangers?
The second-generation American lives in two worlds. We're caught between the old world of our parents and the world into which we were born. And in neither do we fully belong.
We have learned this from the past. Assimilation is a slow and painful process. Even under favorable circumstances, several generations may be required for its completion. In the old days, when America opened its doors to mass immigration, the melting pot idea was popular. Drop the immigrant down into America like a piece of metal into a furnace, and presto, he was fused into an American. The immigrant, however, was not a piece of metal, but a living, breathing human being. Even in the second generation, we found old ties and allegiances persisted. We often demanded that these be denied.
The physical hardships endured by immigrants have often been pictured. But the mental agonies undergone by the children of immigrants are 10 times more poignant.
In the secret places of his heart, the second-generation American was in some ways ashamed of his parents.
I wish my mother would wear a hat instead of a shawl, like other children's mothers. I wish my father wouldn't eat with his knife.
In adolescence, The conflict between the old ways and the new, repressed in childhood, often raged into the open.
Madre mia! What have I done that God should punish me with such a child? You're nothing but a bum.
A bum, you call me? A bum because I get a bad report card. Look at you. You've been in this country 20 years and you can't even write your name. Every time I take my report card back signed with an X, I'm ashamed. I'm ashamed.
I've been sitting in the park with Harry. That's where I've been.
And what's wrong with bringing your Harry home to sit?
What's wrong? I'll tell you. You sit over us like an old hen, never a minute alone.
Oh.
We're not going to do anything bad. We just want a little freedom. This is America.
This isn't the old country. It's America. The battle cry of the second generation. And this generation was to see its children fulfill its own desperate longing to become real American.
By the third generation, the process of assimilation has been more or less completed. Few of the third generation have any interest in the land of their forebears. Few know any language but English. They dress American, talk American, eat American. However, many have discarded the religion, the moral standards, the values of their forebears.
And what has America offered to take the place of what has been cast off? Too often we've given only the threadbare slogan, success.
Be rich, enroll in our correspondence school.
Be popular, learn to dance in 5 easy lessons.
Be a good hostess, use our silver plate.
Be a good mother, use our talcum powder.
It is our failure, not theirs, that the third generation too often today finds its heroes not in its forebears, but in the cardboard men of the ads, the celluloid people of the cheap movie house.
Okay, Two-Gun, you got away from me this time, but you won't again. Remember this, nobody gets away from Smiling Sam but once.
Okay, Two-Gun. You got away from me this time, but you won't again. Remember this. Nobody gets
Joseph.
Away from Smiling Sam but
Joseph.
Once. Huh?
I'm speaking to you.
Oh, was you talking to me, Miss Phillips?
I certainly was. For the third time, what is the Monroe Doctrine?
By the third generation, sociologists tell us, assimilation has been more or less complete. The third generation, insofar as it is able, has become American. But in many cases, there is still a wall between these children and other Americans. A wall of our making.
Dad, there's something I have to tell you. You're not going to like it,
but... What is it, Joseph?
I want to change my name. Dad, I've been turned down by 3 colleges already. I'll never get to be a doctor with a name like ours. Dad, don't look like that. Try to understand. I'm not ashamed of you. I'm not ashamed.
In America today, for all our progress, it is still more comfortable to be light than dark. More comfortable to be Protestant than Catholic or Jewish. More comfortable to be called Smith than Ivanovich or Giordano.
So I don't get the job.
I'm sorry. It's not me. It's just a policy of the management. Your qualifications are excellent, but...
But you don't like my face.
I'm sorry. All our apartments are taken.
Oh, but the sign says...
I'm sorry.
I get it. You're restricted.
This is not the whole picture. There are colleges in America that have taken a stand against discrimination. There are employers, too. And there are newspapers that refuse to print discriminatory ads. 8 of our states have passed fair employment practice legislation. which makes it a crime to discriminate in hiring, job tenure, or conditions of employment because of race, color, creed, or national origin. In some of our public schools, too, where classes are not too big, teachers not too overworked, Americanism is being taught in a new way.
I'm a 100% American. My father told me so.
Oh, and just what is a 100% American, Bobby?
Why, it's...
Yes, go on.
Well, it's people like me.
Mm-hmm.
People who aren't foreigners. Well, isn't it?
You know, Bobby, you sound to me as though you think America is a little plot of ground with a fence around it and a no trespassing sign. Why, we're a great big giant of a country. And in the past, we've been big enough to make room for people from every other country in the world.
Well, that's the trouble, my father says. He says we've been too big-hearted, letting just, well, everybody in.
Well, that's one way of looking at it, Bobby, but there's another. All these people that you call foreigners and turn up your nose at, they've helped to make America what it is.
Why, it was even a foreigner that discovered America. What about that, Bobby?
And what about the things we eat here? Spaghetti and frankfurters and chop suey?
And what about Irish potatoes?
I bet Bobby's such a good American, he wouldn't even eat them.
Much has been done, but much remains to do. Since World War II, we've opened our doors to new thousands of displaced persons, refugees from totalitarianism. What will America mean to them? What will democracy mean?
Democracy is not just a word, a catchphrase. A child must experience democracy to believe in it.
Yes. A child must experience democracy to believe in it.
Acabaca soda cracker, acabaca boo. If your father chews tobacco, out goes you.
Hey, you're in, Irene, you're in.
Hey, Mary, I want to play. Let me play, too.
You can't, Josephine. We've got too many already.
Okay. Will you come to my house after school? Will you?
I guess not.
Why not?
My mother said... Well, she said I wasn't to play with you.
Oh, I know why she said it. Because we live in over our store, and my grandmother can't talk good.
My mother said your folks are foreigners.
I don't care if they are. I'm an American. Everybody came from somewhere in the beginning. Even George Washington's folks, I bet.
Everybody came from somewhere in the beginning. Mary's people landed at Plymouth Rock, Josephine's at Castle Garden. We are not a nation, but a teeming nation of nations.
Mary Adams?
Here.
Joe Barranco?
Here.
Ann Cabot?
Here.
David Cohen?
The season of
here.
Thanksgiving is a time for remembering our heritage.
George Kabulian?
For remembering here. That our abundance... is in our peoples, too, in our differences as well as our likeness. For only when we can educate our children to take full pride in the rich and varied threads that make American life the tapestry that it is, only then will the promise be fulfilled. Only then will all our children have a feeling of belonging, and none the children of strangers. If you would like a copy of today's script, please send your name and address with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. And now we take great pleasure in presenting Mr. Herman T. Stichman, New York State Commissioner of Housing.
As we give thanks for democracy's blessings, for strength gained in youth from our fertile land, for knowledge later acquired in halls of higher learning that must open to all, for initiative fostered by a country where ideas and religions freely flourish, let us each ask ourselves what we are doing in action, not merely in conversation, to show our gratitude. Too often, as those who come from abroad can sadly testify, Some in foreign lands have regarded the strength derived from the Almighty's gifts as the means selfishly to better their own lives and not those of their fellow men. So the weak, the aged, the persons whose thinking deviated from the majority have been neglected and trampled upon under totalitarianism. Even here, because of the understandable wish of children to live apart as they marry, the passing of large homes in favor of more compact housing, and the desire of the elderly to live their own lives, the old custom of having aging parents live with one of the married children is necessarily disappearing. The old man in the inspiring drama just presented might well be heard to say, "I'm an old man now. When I was young, to work for something better for my children. That was my life. I struggled. I fed them. I brought them up to have better than I had. They have their own struggles now for their own children. That is good. I'm feeble. I have my rocking chair. But where can I put it? With just a little comfort and privacy. Not, surely not, in an institution in my declining years. So I'm happy to tell you that in our democracy, our state of New York is doing something to point the way toward housing the aged, where they can rock out their declining years in comfort. We're going to build apartments just for them in state-aided, low-rent public housing projects with special facilities to prevent accidents, to bring them comfort and sunshine as they quietly rock out their declining years with their memories. Let's hope others will follow our example and not merely talk about the problem. One measure of the quality of a civilization is its care of the aged. Let us give thanks that we live in a democracy where the elderly will never be forgotten and where our measure will ever be high.
Thank you, Mr. Stitchman. Our eternal light drama today, Children of Strangers, was written by Virginia Mazur. The music was composed and conducted by Morris Mamarski. Cantor David Potterman sang the liturgical introduction. The narrator was Norman Rose. The production was under the direction of Fred Way. This is Lionel Rico speaking. Time to present The Eternal Light is made available by the National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations. This weekly program is presented under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.